that there are three areas that the council felt that the capacity projections inappropriately limited the guidelines. And those three areas were sanctions for delivery, manufacturing, and cultivation of controlled substances, imprisonment as a sanction for post-prison supervision violations, and sanctions for violent crimes against persons. Maybe you could walk us through each one of those areas from highest priority to lowest priority and tell us where and how you think the guidelines are inappropriately limited by capacity. If that makes sense.
Mark.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, the inappropriate limitations as they pertain to control substances in effect amount to a judgment that the sanctions for the offenses that are proposed to be changed are lower than than is desirable. They're inappropriately low because of resource limitations. The judgment about use of prison for sanctioning post-prison supervision violations, what would now be parole, is a judgment that 6 months as a flat across the board's limitation is inappropriately low and should be increased in some fashion. We recommend it, as I think your proposal does, a scaling according to the duration of supervision.
Let me stop you there. Does everybody have in front of them this report? Because it's going to make a whole lot more sense if you're following along. Okay, sorry. Summary.
And then the final area, again, amounts to a judgment that the pending or the guideline sanctions for the violent crimes against persons are inappropriately low. But I think I could fairly say it would be the sense of the council that is a judgment which is definitely less emphatic than the first two, because in fact the guidelines with respect to virtually all of those offenses stiffen responses compared to what is now being served, and in many cases considerably. So it's on the list, but the real emphasis, I think it's accurate to say, it's consciously a third compared to those first two areas for attention.
Okay.
I think I think the key question, Mr. Chairman, of course, since there'd certainly be no quarrel with pursuing what the council itself has recommended, I think the key question is the whole issue of timing changes. We tried in the report to emphasize, in respect to those different recommendations, Representative Clark, that they were recommendations that were hinged on or were recommended priorities for taking advantage of new capacity when it became available. We can assess for you what the impact will be of any given one of them, given a certain effective date assumption, and I think we're prepared to do that. I think that's where the big problem comes. It's when do you put them into effect, and what do you assume you're going to be able to provide by way of new beds at what points in time? You're quite right. The council's own, the pending guidelines will require that growth you described over the 10 years. So what we're talking about is adding on to that, of course, depending on what choice you want to make and what time you make it effective.
So what you're saying is we couldn't very well do everything that's in your report immediately without causing a bottleneck in fairly short order.
I think that's correct.
Well, I guess my confusion on that is we've already got a bottleneck. We've already, in making the transition from the existing system to guidelines, how far down the road is a bottleneck going to come? I mean, obviously, you're going to try and avoid that bottleneck through whatever interim adjustments you need as you watch prison beds come online. I'm just trying to get a sense for how much flexibility do we have? I mean, you've come up with recommendations that are going to cause a 1,200 bed shortfall over 10 years. At what point do those two lines cross and you actually have more offenders than space?
You turn to page 3 on the capacity report, Representative Clark and members. You'll see how the effect of the pending guidelines works out over that 10-year period. And if you want to avoid what you're calling a bottleneck with respect to the pending guidelines, as I understand your question, then the legislature, in conjunction with the Department of Corrections, is going to have to be sure that those, apart from the first biennium where we think the beds can be handled in the 3% margin, from there on you're talking about adding at those rates of beds beyond the 500. That's already assumed in this.
Beyond the first 500 from the medium security or whatever it's going to be. Prison.
Now, I think the question that the timing issue raises is how large are you going to make the, how much larger are you going to make those numbers at certain benchmark periods? In terms of, and it calls for a judgment as to what you think you can realistically achieve by way of new resources. I mean, it's a judgment call.
Okay.
So.
From a prior discussion we had, it's my understanding that if you took everything that's in this report, and if we just handed it back to you and said, go do those, go improve the guidelines in those areas, that would cost an additional roughly 1,300 beds over 10 years. From our prior conversation, that's a ballpark figure, in addition to the 1,200 shortfall already.
I think that's approximately right. We'd have to total up the actual options in your proposal to be sure that's correct, but I think in ballpark terms you're right.
I think it's important, though, we keep in perspective that the experience on prediction of capacities has been abysmally bad. And it's never been to the deficit side in the sense of empty cells. I hope no one here kids themselves to think there'll ever be any deficit out there. Marion County's experience is just right up there. She's right at the top of the front of our consciousness. That's why I am just so dubious about any type of increased pressure. Also, you've got to realize you're projecting out into future biennium, and I have yet to see. We talk about these new cells, but I've yet to see anybody come up here with a checkbook. I don't know if you represent Courtney. Given the economy can't go on forever, this is all very, very dubious.
That's true.
Representative Courtney.
First of all, the amendments on 19 talked about an effective date. Mr. Myers, November 1, 1989, and so I was waiting to hear still what impact the B-19 amendments would have in terms of prison space. Why cogitate that for a moment? Shouldn't we really, and this is for anybody on this side of the aisle, that side of the aisle, being from Marion County, Representative Mannix can do what he wants in terms of speak for himself or not. Let's not kid ourselves. I believe the new beds coming online, if we can get the prison siting bed out, I believe they're going to be behind schedule. We're going 500 beds up front. I don't know when you're going to see that 3,000th bed because there's a lot of politics involved in that. I think you know what I'm talking about. Now there's discussion about minimum versus medium. I think we're making a mistake now since we're working so hard in truth and sentencing and your work to try to let anybody believe, be it in this room or outside this room, that we're ever going to end up with a 3% vacancy rate in my lifetime. In my lifetime. I'm just praying, if I may be allowed to use that word, that we can hold the OSPs at 1,800 and the OSCIs at 1,100, even though they've made commitments to me in Marion County. They're going to lower both those institutions by 200 to 300 inmates. I don't see it in this century. And I really mean that. And I know we don't like, this is theory, and I know we don't like, we're not going to have a surplus of prison beds in this decade, or in this century. I mean, isn't that pretty well, given all the problems we're having? Don't you pretty much agree with that?
Yes.
Thank you. I mean, that's what you were saying, Mr. Let's not play games. I mean, I love living here and representing this area, but I got to start telling the people in this area, folks, OSP ain't going to go down much below 1,800. That isn't because of the 200-bed segregation that they're going to build out there, or OSCI is not going to go much below 1,100. And we got to live with it here. I just want to see a bed built. I think your system is tougher. Now, if you want to adopt these additional things, Representative Clark, go ahead and do so. But let's not kid ourselves. Pendleton, I don't know how many people are in Pendleton today. Maybe you know, Representative Baum, how many people are in Pendleton. I'll bet you
they're going to pretty soon start doing the same thing that OSP and OSCI are doing. So there today, it's kicked that much in that short a period of time. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to follow up in a very dramatic way because of your experience 10 years here, that you got us, that's truth in sentencing, that's truth in prisoning and incarceration.
Based on what you said, Mr. Chair, then this is so elusive that you never get to the point where you can really have, regardless of whether guidelines or parole board, truth in sentencing.
Let me give you 10 years of experience, and I'm sure that Chairman Myers can give you 14 years of experience. That it remains a absolute truism that good jails are never good politics because no one ever wants to pay for them. No one ever wants to pay for them. Third time, no one ever wants to pay for them.
Except for the House of Representatives this session.
But we just put a substantial...
This session you did.
How many did you buy? You bought 500 beds,
you bought
right?
500 beds.
500 beds. You're going to buy, go buy 3,000 beds. Would this House of Representatives go for 3,000 beds?
Years to buy, Peter.
Mr. Chairman.
I think that we can all agree that prison capacity, excess prison capacity, is an elusive target. The state of Washington did achieve, for a very short term, a surplus, and now they find themselves moving right into a deficit.
And the feds.
The federal government has been in the same situation. I think we should all understand, and I understand and recognize philosophically, that for the long term, the real solution in dealing with crime problems is getting at the root causes of crime. The only question is whether or not in the interim, the short term, how much capacity we can reach for to try to deal with the worst symptoms of the problem. And we can all agree on that philosophically. When we get back to these guidelines, we have a tool. It's one of many tools in the criminal justice system that will help us manage the problem. And I'd like to have us go through Representative Clark's amendments in series to see whether or not we agree that in managing the problem, certain additive tools or subtractive tools ought to be put into these guidelines. And some of these ideas I may be comfortable with, others not. But we have to recognize there's a resource limitation out there, and when we're addressing this legislation or any other legislation, we need to be reminded of that. It's an unfortunate fact of life, too, that there are two chambers in the legislature, and sometimes one is more willing to move than another.
Not in Nebraska.
Mr. Chair. In this legislation.
Mr. Chair. Well, I guess one of the responses I want to get from the panel, the great debate, it seems to me, on sentencing guidelines has been, are they going to limit, are they going to drive or respond to capacity? And it seems to me that that the council has already told us that they want the guidelines to be a response to capacity which is provided by the legislature. If they wanted the guidelines to be an excuse for not building prisons, they would have come back to us and said, capacity's fine. We'll trim the guidelines back and the sentences back to fit existing capacity. They didn't do that. They came to us and said, we're going to be 1,200 beds short because the guidelines that we in good conscience put forward as appropriate sanctions are going to force the issue by 1,200 beds.
Yeah, but it's interesting because, to be very frank, I remember in 81, Judge Hargraves sat in the other room with a completely straight face on this topic. We were discussing prison population in 81, and we said to Judge Hargraves, Judge Hargraves, you know, you do have some responsibility regarding the number of people sentenced, to which Judge Hargraves, who I think is my contemporary, said, no, I have absolutely no responsibility at all. The responsibility is totally the legislature's to impose taxes and to build prisons.
I just fill them up.
Which this is not a stellar moment in lobbying on the part of Judge Hargraves.
But it does, I mean, the whole question...
It's the same thing.
But the whole question is, it is up to the legislature to raise taxes or break spending limits or build prisons or do whatever we need to do. It's up to the board and the council to tell us, to give us recommendations. Once we decide how much space we want, and they can make recommendations as to how those spaces should be filled. And I'm adamant that it ought not be the other way around.
Well, you take that approach. At the same time, it's easy enough for the board to say, we need more capacity, then that gets the board off the hook.
Sure, because and the board's doing that because the 87 legislation directed them to do that.
And we can sit here and huff and puff all we want about capacity, but until people are willing to spend significant monies. And now look at the money you're spending. You're spending funny money. You're spending lottery money. And remember, Representative Clark, we said how many times we send this out to vote of the people? Three times.
Three times.
The people have said no three times that they don't want more prisons. They've said no three times.
Funding mechanism or not, priorities chosen by the legislature.
Let's not get into a huge, what's done is done. I'm just trying to find out from when we go forward here in terms of telling the public through the media what we're doing, that I think that there's a possibility that we're conveying the impression that this is going to take care of the criminal justice system. Yeah. With all due respect to the board and the council and whatever this committee does, I still think we got a heck of a mess in our hands, and it's going to be years, and I'm not even sure we're going to see solutions this decade. That's all I'm saying, since we're talking about we're going to be truthful now. I just think that should be part of the discussion, as opposed to, Representative Miller was saying, for 30 years we waited. Well, there's been things tried in the last 30 years. They haven't worked for whatever reasons. We're at the moment now, we're trying to build some more jails, and the question is, are they going to be filled up? Who's going to go? And the truth of the matter is, are we going to be right back where we are today in terms of these sentencing guidelines? I mean, in other words, where people are going to be getting out that shouldn't be getting out or something like that. And that's the only thing I'm trying to get a handle on for purposes of this discussion, to be very frank with you.
Representative Maddox, then back to Representative Clark.
We're just talking allocation of resources here. An intelligent plan for allocating limited resources. And if we want to allocate more resources, then we can move our grids in any direction we want to. If we want to restrict resources, we can move in the other direction until we have the resources available. Now, your question is, do we say, these are the resources we want to use, move the grid in that direction, or do we say, move the grid in that direction, now what resources do we need? And that's a push-pull thing that will always be there. Now, in terms of the philosophy of the legislation, my reaction is, it's not just how long I want to put somebody into prison. It's how much money I want to spend on the criminal justice system as opposed to the education system, as opposed to the mental health or physical health programs that we're talking about, and that is allocation of resources. That is a dynamic that won't end. But for that very reason, I happen to agree with one of the amendments proposed by Representative Clark, which is that every 2 years, if there's going to be changes in this grid, they shouldn't just go into effect automatically. That's like setting up a commission to write the state budget, and then unless the legislature vetoes it, the budget goes into effect. I prefer to say every 2 years the guidelines, any modifications are presented to the legislature. There's a report about where we are in terms of resources, and we make a decision. Okay, we're going to be having to cut back on sentences because there's not enough room in the inn, or we're going to add some more rooms to the inn, and we can look at it as allocation of resources. That's the thrust of it as far as I'm concerned. And then the question is, which of these amendments fit into our allocation plan?
The thing that's significant to me about the B-19 amendments is that I think it gets at a question that the other amendments don't. The other amendments, by and large, tinker with the mechanisms of sentencing guidelines. B-19 responds to a threshold inquiry, which is, the 87 legislation said to the board, if you can't in good conscience do guidelines within the existing capacity, in other words, the sanctions that you're looking at aren't appropriate sanctions, then you come back and tell us that. And they've come back and told us that. And I think that is a huge statement on their part. They're saying that with existing capacity, they can't provide appropriate sanctions. That's what that report says. And I think that it's incumbent on us to respond to that report. I don't think we have any choice. If we don't respond to that report, then the guidelines are, by their own admission, inappropriate, inadequate, and not strong enough to provide adequate sanctions. I think that's the dialogue that's already gone on. That's the message that's in this May 19th report, and I don't think we can ignore it. Mr. Myers, is that a fair statement of the dialogue that's gone on between the council and the legislature?
It's nice it's in the report, but trying to run that recommendation through the process now is nigh on impractical and impossible. We can't even seem to get through our present corrections planning process as it is right now.
But I think that, again, Mr. Chair, if I can make a point, if we took
the B-19 amendments and gave them back to the council and said, go do those things. Even those additional capacity demands would fall within projected corrections planning, the 3,000 beds that the governor has already planned for.
Oh, okay. Well, I see your point, except the perspective I'm trying to give you is that I will, as sure as the sun came up today, those 3,000 beds, that hypothetical 3,000 beds, will be inadequate. That's just the way it always happens.
I understand that, but that's the best we've got to go with right now. Okay. It's a separate question from the timing.
When he's going to take effect.
When these guidelines come online.
But, I want to know something. It's going to take effect November 1st if we can ever get this thing going, right? When will the impact be felt in OSP, OSCI, and Pendleton? I want to start dealing with that issue because 3,000 beds right now is pie in the sky as far as I'm concerned, since we don't even have a single one of those beds built. We don't even know where we're going to build the first one, and I'm getting more worried about that with every day. When will the effect of these things be felt on my backyard? That's very parochial. That's very self-serving, and I know it is, Mr. Speaker, and I'm sorry about that, but it's going to take place right here in River City. When?
Representative Courtney, if I could direct you back to that table on page 3 of the capacity report. If you have that, it will show you the projected shortfall in beds at the benchmark dates set out in the left margin.
So I don't have to worry until 1991?
We think the 113 beds, according on the council's approach, is that that's going to be absorbed within that 3% margin. From that point on, the figures assume an effort to maintain something like that 3%, and those numbers are then taking that into account, what you're going to need without any further changes in the guidelines on those benchmark dates. So if you allow the guidelines to go forward as they now stand without any amendments, by 92, and of course there's a month-to-month problem
right
here, we don't have broken out,
right,
but by 1992, you've got to be sure you have at least 217 beds beyond the 500 and the other changes in capacity that are set forth earlier. And then,
so this 91 deadline assumes you've got a 500-bed joint somewhere ever in this state, right, that we're talking about, additional 500-bed joint, right? This 991 date that you've got here, the first date on page 3, top 991, that assumes that you've got 500 beds built that aren't built as of this moment, correct?
I think that's on page 2, and I think it's 400.
No, that's on page 3. I'm looking at a chart.
Go back to page 2, Representative Courtney. The fast-track capacity plan from the department is set out there, and the assumptions about the different institutions in the new medium, the last entry you can see there on page 2.
You're assuming 400 of those beds will be online by 991.
Yes, those are this is the department's fast track plan.
And if that is a delay and we don't have it opposed to 991, you're going to have to absorb them at the OSP and OSCI, right? Is that not correct? I assume that that's right.
Yeah, some other institutions.
But, Mr. Speaker, what did you say? What did you just say quietly there? I'm sorry, Judge, I'm not trying to interrupt you. You said something aside there. Is that right or wrong, Hardy?
I'm not sure I can say it's right or wrong. Let me answer it this way, Representative Courtney. The other provision in this bill that we were talking about a moment ago is the one that directs the board to make changes in sanctioning policies to keep population within effective capacity. And I think that if you're talking about, let's say, a failure to get the 400 beds, let's assume a total failure, then you're likely to either have triggered that or it may be a matter that the next session would be grappling with. Depends on when,
Mr. Chairman,
how far the fast track goes off the track.
The numbers that we have here are within range of control. By that I
should
mean...
Should be.
Yes. If we're talking 500 even as a deficit in 2 years, there's another legislative session before then. If we haven't grappled enough with the symptoms of the crime problem in terms of prisons, by that time, we'll hear enough from the public that not just part of the lottery money, but all of the lottery money will go to buying prison ships and building prison camps, or people will finally recognize that some of those resources ought to be allocated to getting to the root causes.
You got to understand, by 91, whether it be 91 or 93, this economy is not going to hold that long. And take it from the voice of experience, Chairman Myers can tell you, when the wheels fall off the budget, it's not pretty, is it? and wait until you've spent. How long are we here in special session? 45 days?
Which special session do you mean?
We had five, I think.
Blood on the floor.
45, you wait until you spend a 45-day special session trying to cut budgets.
Are you telling me that we shouldn't go with these guidelines?
Oh, I'm saying that I think the guidelines are again a useful tool, and I think expanding the guidelines at this time, increasing population through toughening the guidelines, is just kidding ourselves for several reasons.
Well, until we have the gold ring or brass ring in our grasp, it's foolish to talk about another brass ring. I can agree that. On the other hand, we need to be aware that this is a push-pull that's available, and I'm back to Representative Clark's concept that every session, the legislature ought to be taking a look at the hard, fast allocation.
That's an interesting concept, except I'll predict that if you put yourself in that position in 91-93, you're going to be in a position in 91-93 where you'll be spending more money on prisons, but that money will have to come, basically, just this budget reality will have to come from education. There's just no other place. Or you can starve people on human resources.
Are you now? Can we start talking about specific amendments and how they fit the system?
Yeah.
Because the biggest amendment, as far as I'm concerned, is the one that says that the legislature has to approve any changes in the guidelines. As opposed to them going into effect unless the legislature vetoes
them. Well, it's an amendment, to be very frank. It guts the whole Criminal Justice Council Sentencing Board concept.
Mr. Chair, I don't think it does, and I don't think that Mr. Myers would say that it does. I'd be curious in your reaction to that.
Well, no, I think that if the legislature wants to revise the procedure as it's proposed here, it's a straightforward policy judgment, and I think it's a practical matter. The amount of amending that is going to occur in the future is probably going to be fairly limited anyway, whether it's done by rule that you have the opportunity to repeal or whether it's recommendations to you. I suspect the major recommendations are probably going to center around modifications of the sanctions policy that are trying to track with the new resources.
Like all the proposals to abolish the Board of Parole years ago, everybody loved the idea of abolishing the Board of Parole Board. Nobody could figure out what to do, with the function of the Board of Representatives.
Well, the question is, how does the legislature react to reports from the commission? The commission reports, well, there's a heavy trend of crime. We have to reduce the guidelines in order to accommodate current space, or there's going to have to be further space if you want to even maintain the guidelines that are in place right now. That's the way it goes. Now, do the politicians in the legislature in any given session react to that by passing legislation to build prison space or to reduce the guidelines, or do they just not act? And if they don't act, through that inaction, they have created prison overcrowding problems. And at any given time,
the amendment, that would be the situation, because the legislature would have to affirmatively.
So in that respect, I guess what you're saying is, in terms of this kind of allocation of resource, let the reality be presented to the legislature, and that gives them an opportunity to act. But absent action, there's going to have to be some intelligent way of dealing with the overpopulation that's going to result,
and
rather than simply opening the front doors and saying whoever's the fastest to run out gets out the front door, and after 100 of you have run out, we'll close the doors again.
Well, I'll tell you who will end up running it, though, at that time. Will be the federal court will end up running the prison.
I don't know why I don't have this, because I have...
If it takes an affirmative vote of the legislature to reduce the guidelines in order to control population, or an affirmative vote of the legislature in order to build more beds, which takes a long time and probably won't be any money, you'll get yourself in a situation where there is no money to build further, and there's no political will to reduce the guidelines. That will happen. And at that time, when you have intolerable overcrowding, the federal court will take over your prison.
But Mr. Chair, I guess the point I would want to make is that before Colori, Clark, and Burton ever had any amendments drafted, before we ever did that, the council themselves has told us that scenario is down the horizon, is down the road. Because the guidelines that they have brought us
are going to cause a capacity shortfall.
And basically, this is no criticism of the council, it's going to sound like it, the council itself, and they're going to disagree with me, the council itself couldn't resist temptation not to stay within population. You see, there's always that temptation to get a little bit tougher. You know? And it is a temptation. And that's, I appreciate what they've done, and I know the people on the council, and I know the personalities, and I know what their thinking was, and I was in the council. But they bring us this recommendation.
Go ahead. With all due respect, I disagree. I think what they said was, if we move the disposition grid sentences back any further, they will not be appropriate sentences for these crimes. We can't in good conscience recommend this sentence for this crime.
Well, yeah, you're putting it in nice words. You're saying appropriate sentence for crime.
Chairman?
Representative Mann.
Back to the original function of this process, you've simply told us, look, we tried to match reality in terms of allocation of resources with desirability in terms of sanctions. Here's the best we can do given the proposed amount of prison space available. But even on this track, but what you're giving us is good for 2 years.